Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartztraber. On today's show, the future of internet regulation. Yesterday, at an event here at the Newseum in Washington, D.C., Federal Communications Chairman Ajit Pai laid out a plan to undo so-called Title II. In 2015, the FCC under Chairman Tom Wheeler reclassified broadband under Title II of the 1934 Communications Act. These are basically utility-style rules designed for railroads and telephone networks. Then the FCC said this was necessary to maintain net neutrality and a free and open internet. But the current chairman, Ajit Pai, says undoing Title II will actually hashtag free the net. You can go ahead and check that on Twitter. So does undoing Title II really mean the death of net neutrality, or is this exactly what broadband needs? Who better to explain this than the chairman himself? I'd love to welcome to the show Chairman Ajit Pai. I know you've got a really busy schedule, so I really appreciate you joining.
It is great to be back on the podcast.
And also joining is FCC intern and president of Tech Freedom, Baron Soka. Baron, thank you for joining the show.
Thanks. I was expecting it to be described as a third wheel again.
No, that was mean. I would never say that again. So, Mr. Chairman, today there's an op-ed circling around the interwebs, as they are, by Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon, Senator Al Franken from Minnesota, and your predecessor, Tom Wheeler, a former FCC chairman. And the headline says that you want to hand the internet over to big corporations. I'll just give you a chance to defend yourself first.
Well, first, Evan, thanks for having me back on. The op-ed was an exercise in a hysterical overstatement and frank, flat-out misinformation in a number of different ways. For example, they mischaracterized exactly how the internet has been regulated over these many years. We had light touch regulation from the dawn of the commercial internet until 2015. But if you look at the op-ed, they cite, for example, the case of YouTube in 2005 as an example of how net neutrality preserved a free and open internet. And I think we all know, those of us who are sentient, that 2005 happened before 2015, before there are these Title II regulations. And to me, at least, it just illustrated that we had a free and open internet with light touch regulation. And we could, again, if the government would just get out of the business of regulating this online platform.
So supporters of Title II say it is the only way to have net neutrality, to have a free and open internet. Is there a difference between Title II and net neutrality in your view?
There's a huge difference. I think all of us believe in the core value of net neutrality, which is that we want a free and open internet for consumers and entrepreneurs alike. Title II is very, very different. It is a set of heavy-handed rules developed in the 1930s to handle Ma Bell, the telephone monopoly. And the FCC, on a party-line vote, preemptively slapped all of those regulations on every single internet service provider in the United States, the big ones that we all know, and small ones like Main Street Broadband in Cannon Falls, Minnesota. Minnesota, an ISP, which at the time had only four customers. It seems to me absurd to suggest that smaller ISPs, or all of them in this competitive marketplace, should be presumed to be anti-competitive monopolists in the absence of any evidence of market failure.
But of course, during that 20 years of light touch, it wasn't like nothing bad ever happened, right? So one of the cases that's often cited as a clear net neutrality violation is 2007, Comcast, a major player in the broadband service space, was throttling BitTorrent, which is not only used for illegal downloading, but some of my younger listeners might be familiar with that technology. But without strong net neutrality rules on the books, what do you see as a way to prevent those bad things from happening? And a lot of critics of Title II say that this parade of horribles will never happen. But let's imagine a world where ISPs do bad things. After you undo Title II, what happens when companies do bad things?
But I think the very example you cite is evidence of the fact that Title II was unnecessary. The fact that the FCC in 2015 had to go back 8 years to find an example that proved the point they were trying to make. I mean, if the internet really was broken sufficiently to justify Title II, you would think there would be legions of contemporary examples that they could bring up. That's point number one. Point number two, even that particular case was resolved, I think, without the need for Title II. And there are other cases, scattered cases that the FCC cited, the so-called Madison River case in 2005. A lot of these so-called disputes were resolved privately or were debunked. And so going forward, it seems to me the best way to take action would be for the Federal Trade Commission, for the Justice Department, or any other competition authority to take a look at anti-competitive conduct by a particular actor, not for the FCC to preemptively impose all of these regulations on every single internet service provider, regardless of good or bad conduct.
When the Republican FCC decided to take on on net neutrality, though, in 2008, that kind of had the practical effect of shutting out the Federal Trade Commission for about a decade. And skeptics of the FTC might say, look, that's 10 years of not studying net neutrality. That's 10 years of a lack of expertise. Does the Federal Trade Commission have the engineering expertise of the FCC? Can they really police broadband networks if we're in a world where there is not a bright line rule and companies are doing all sorts of things and government has to try to keep up with a dynamic environment? Is the FTC capable of doing this if the FCC undoes Title II and kicks that authority back to the FTC?
Two different points. First of all, as a practical matter, I can tell you for a fact that the Federal Trade Commission does have that expertise. I spent many years in the Justice Department's Antitrust Division in the telecom section working on M&A and working on regulation. I can tell you there and at with our counterparts at the FTC that they study these issues very closely. Second of all, the authority that they administer, the competition laws like the Sherman Act, the Clayton Act, etc., give these agencies a flexible framework to think about competitive issues that arise. So unlike, for example, the Communications Act, which in some cases is very prescriptive and its mandates are essentially outdated almost by the time the ink is dry. Here, competition law can take account of changing circumstances. It gives you the ability to look very broadly at what the marketplace is like and to tailor remedies accordingly. And so I actually think they do have the flexibility and the expertise to handle these issues.
And Barron, you're one of the few people in DC who really gets into the FTC. It's shockingly not maybe the most popular policy topic in a world where healthcare and immigration and all sorts of other stuff's going on. But Barron, how do you see the FTC's role in policing net neutrality, given that there are so many concerns from startups that they'll be put in the slow lane, or given that we have companies like Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T becoming media companies that have their own products that compete with the edge services, and wouldn't they have an incentive to favor their own products over others? So what do you think about the FTC as a net neutrality cop on the beat?
Well, this conversation often gets framed as a question about antitrust. Is antitrust enough? And some people will say, well, of course, it's not enough to deal with net neutrality issues. But antitrust is just one of the tools in the FTC's toolkits. So the way to think about this is we're not actually even talking about, is it the FCC or the FTC? It's, is it the FCC or is it a layered model? And in the layered model, you have the Federal Trade Commission, the Department of Justice, and the state attorneys generals, and also private litigants who can bring antitrust cases to deal with anti-competitive conduct. So when people jump up and down and they say, oh my God, there could be anti-competitive conduct by Verizon and so on, that's why we have to have the FCC. They just don't understand that there is already a rich body of competition law that's capable of dealing with that. But that's only layer one. Layer two is consumer protection law. And within that, there are several layers. So the FTC can punish deceptive conduct. So if a company says it's going to do something and does something else, the FTC can bring an enforcement action. It doesn't need to show any harm at all. People don't understand that. They think, oh my God, there's this harm requirement. That's going to be impossible to show. Well, back in 2007, 2008, when Comcast was accused of throttling BitTorrent traffic, that was a pretty simple deception case. And the Federal Trade Commission stood ready to bring an enforcement action. The Republican chairman, the ranking Democrat at the time, who later became chairman, they were ready to do it. And the reason they backed down was that the FCC chairman at the time insisted that his agency was going to handle this. So we could have lived in a very different world. We could have spent the last 9-10 years seeing how the Federal Trade Commission handled these issues. And we might then have a clear idea of, okay, well, where do we need additional authority? Where might the FTC need additional staff and so on, right? And that, I think, is the world that where we're going to be. But it's not just that. It's also, of course, it's if companies do put out a code of conduct, which I think they will, 90%+ of this is not controversial. And companies, whether the FCC says anything about it or not, there will be a code of conduct. That'll be part of the baseline enforcement. It'll be an easy enforcement action to bring. But even that isn't the end of the story, because the FTC, the states, they all have these unfairness statutes. So if there's a practice that actually harms users without countervailing benefit that users can't reasonably avoid, that can be the subject of an enforcement action. So again, it's competition law, it's unfairness, it's deception. And critically here, this isn't just the Federal Trade Commission that can do this, it's the states too. So if you thought that, okay, well, we can't trust the Republican FTC, well, California and New York are going to be very aggressive here. So the FTC, long story short, is a very strong enforcement agency. I'd like to see it have more resources. I'd be in favor of transferring some of the broadband experts from the FCC over to the Federal Trade Commission. I've always wanted them to have a Bureau of Technology. So the FTC could be and will be a very powerful regulator here.
So, of course, Democrats, though, are very skeptical of this notion. And let's face it, these companies are not the most popular companies in the world, right? So when consumers think about Google and Netflix, they generally are, favorable, positive feelings. When you think about your telephone provider or your broadband provider, your first thought might be, oh, God, that customer service call I had that was terrible. And that certainly plays into this. And you faced a lot of pushback, Mr. Chairman, when you met with some of these companies and were working on potentially getting that voluntary commitment that Barron has suggested could be enforced by the FTC. But notably, Democrats like Brian Schatz, Senator, a Representative Frank Pallone, these are two Democrats that under Chairman Wheeler had spoken favorably of legislation. Now they might be tacking a little bit to the left. And they said in response to your meetings, telecom companies promising not to do bad things ain't going to cut it. So how do you respond to that criticism?
Well, first, one of the things I was trying to explore with these companies and others was simply what they think the appropriate framework should be and going forward. And what was interesting is that none of them said that Title II was the sine qua non of a free and open internet. And I think that's important because it indicates that they appreciate that regulation in this area has historically been light touch and that it's not necessary to put the government at the center of the internet in order for the internet to be free. The second point is, look, I understand that political actors on Capitol Hill are going to make various statements about the merits or demerits of particular legislation or the wisdom or lack thereof of even sitting at the table. But at the end of the day, I think that it would be best for Congress to step in once and for all and to simply clarify for everybody, for the FCC, FTC, for the American public writ large, what the rules of the road are going to be in the digital world. What we can't have happen is some agency, the FCC, for instance, constantly trying to shoehorn the marketplace of 2017 into these increasingly obsolete frameworks such as 1934 or 1996. Let's have Congress say for once and for all what the rules are going to be.
So one of the other arguments that is often made is that these companies don't necessarily face the stiff competition that edge providers do. So what do you make of that argument that, yes, maybe they won't do bad things, but they're not, people don't have a million choices for their broadband provider. Maybe there's not as much competition in that market. So those companies need to be regulated more harshly than companies like Netflix. Do you buy that?
Well, first of all, it depends on the measure of competition. For example, the wireless marketplace, I think, is quite competitive. You have all four national carriers that recently have either upgraded or introduced new unlimited data plans. And that's precisely because it is a very competitive marketplace with respect to mobile broadband. With respect to wired broadband, too, look, the previous FCC wanted to ratchet up the standard artificially to 25 megabits per second in order to say that some companies had an uncompetitive bottleneck leverage over the entire market. But at the same time, they refused to let other companies with lower speeds retire some of their copper plant in order to upgrade to fiber. And so I think, generally speaking, this has been much more of a political exercise by those making that argument than one of intellectual honesty.
So we've seen a parade of horribles on both sides, right? So the proponents of strict net neutrality rules, Title II, said that there will be ISPs doing so many bad things in without these rules. But then some of the opponents of Title II said, well, Title II will break the internet. And for the average person, is that really a fair argument? I mean, in 2014, people were using the internet just fine. Title II goes into effect. People are still using the internet just fine. In your speech yesterday, you talked about some of the negative impacts of Title II. Why should the average consumer care? This might seem just like a dispute between companies over who pays for stuff. So when Comcast and Netflix are arguing back in 2014 and John Oliver's got the nice bit about it, someone might just say they both have a lot of money. They're both big companies. Why should I care which one of them ends up with the short straw? In a Title II world, with or without, why should anyone care about this?
The bottom line to me is that when I meet with consumers, and I've done that from Kalamazoo, Michigan to Carthage, Mississippi, what I consistently hear is not that their internet service provider is blocking traffic or otherwise acting in a competitive way. It's that they want better, faster, cheaper internet. They want more competitive options. And it seems to me that Title II takes us directly in the opposite direction from that. And yes, the internet isn't broken, to borrow from your framing of the question, but the question is, what is the opportunity cost? And as we've seen, investment by the top 12 ISPs has gone down over the last couple of years during the Title II era. For smaller ISPs, we've heard that it's really impaired their ability to get financing and limited their ability and willingness to push their network deeper into the countryside. And so I think at the end of the day, you might not see massive changes from Title II, but over time, and we're seeing the inklings of it now, that the network won't be as robust as it otherwise could be.
So there are multiple government entities at play, and it's not just the FCC, Barron. There's the Supreme Court, there's Congress, and whatever the chairman does, and we're going to see Title II reclassification undone, will that leave a void? I mean, we've seen telecom policy now swing fairly significantly from one set of policies under Chairman Wheeler and President Obama to another set of policies. I mean, where do you see the future of this debate? Is it just going to be ping pong back and forth, or are we going to have some type of resolution?
Well, the first thing I would say about investment is the right way to look at this is not year by year, it's big picture. And if you look at pre-2010, because 2010 is when the prospect of Title II was first raised, what you see, and I hope we'll have George Ford on the show to talk about this, is that the FCC talking about net neutrality under Republicans didn't have any effect on investment. It was already baked into what everyone was planning to do, which is just to say there's never really been any debate about this. It's looking 2015 to 2015 and going forward. Then you can show that there's been a dip in investment relative to what otherwise would have happened, not because of net neutrality, but because of Title II. So you remove that. I think you address the concern about investment. You stop this ping-ponging back and forth. But the only way you actually get resolution on that, to answer your question, is either from the Supreme Court or from Congress. Because while we're looking forward to the FCC wrapping up the rulemaking that they'll be starting with this new notice of proposed rulemaking, that's not a permanent solution. And I think the chairman realizes that. Everyone knows that ultimately the FCC, whatever it does, could be reversed yet again by a future Democratic FCC. So ideally, we get clarification as to what the 1996 Telecom Act actually means. And that's why Tech Freedom, representing a number of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs and investors, is the intervener in the case against the 2015 Open Internet Order. And we want the case resolved not on procedural grounds, not about the merits of net neutrality, but on that underlying question of what does the statute mean? So any day now, the D.C. Circuit could rule on the petitions for rehearing of that three-judge panel. One judge dissented very strongly, saying the FCC was reading too much into the statute. And I think you'll see at least a number of judges say the same thing, but we expect that the petition will be denied, as they usually are. And then this goes up to the Supreme Court. And the question is, does the FCC, have they resolved the case first? Does the Supreme Court have a chance to weigh in? I don't know, but I'm increasingly skeptical that Congress will provide a solution, which is the other way to do this. And the politics of that are increasingly bad.
Yeah, and given that the politics are not so great for legislation at the moment, and of course that could change. I mean, what happens at the court might motivate Democrats to get to the table, but we do have, as I mentioned, those representatives that used to speak more favorably about legislation. Now they seem to be tacking to the left. That could just be about opposing everything that seems to be associated with President Trump, or it could be that they're really just decided that they like Title II now. But given that we might be in a world where Title II goes away, there is no legislation, and we are looking at maybe the FTC, state attorneys general, as you mentioned. What do you see as the FCC's role in addressing all of these concerns that, whether they're hypothetical or not, it seems that a substantial number of Americans are concerned that their broadband provider might do something bad? What is the future of internet regulation, Mr. Chairman?
Well, two different points. I mean, first, that's part of the reason why we're seeking comment on the various bright line rules that the previous FCC adopted, because we want to see if there is a legal framework that the public thinks is adequate to support the continuation or potential revision of those rules. But secondly, and this goes back to my earlier answer, to the extent that consumers are actually worried about competition and getting faster, better, and cheaper internet, we're going to keep focused on our proactive agenda. And we have had a very aggressive agenda in just the last 3 months to make it easier to deploy wireless and wireline infrastructure, to make sure that people have more competitive options regardless of where they live, regardless of who they are. And I think over time, while it may take some, obviously a number of months or even years for those regulatory reforms to bear fruit, at the end of the day, that's going to deliver a lot more for consumer welfare than hypothetical regulation that addresses hypothetical harms.
And net neutrality, some of the rhetoric on the left
left has really focused on how the regulations are important to certain communities, communities of color, low-income communities. Given that there are people who are suggesting that your policies would negatively impact those communities, do you have a message to send there?
Well, first, it's the usual political posturing from special interests, which have an ideological axe to grind. It has nothing to do with what actually impacts those communities. If they really cared about those communities, then they would support my agenda to close the digital divide. For example, they vociferously opposed my decision, which was ultimately approved unanimously by my colleagues, to revise what was called the Charter overbuild condition. So when Charter merged with a couple of companies last year, the SEC said, okay, you have to build up to 2 million new locations, and 1 million of them of those locations have to be in areas that are already served by a cable provider.
The idea being it would increase competition.
Exactly. But the consequence of that was that, you know, well, we're leaving on the table 1 million unserved Americans who could benefit from that connectivity. So we reversed that decision, as I said, unanimously, 2 Democrats, 1 Republican. And those same groups which claim to care about the digital divide, about unserved Americans, about folks who are not getting digital opportunity, they vociferously objected. And that's just an indication of the fact that while at 60,000 feet, they might give lip service to the idea that people of color, minority communities, and others deserve a chance, when the rubber meets the road, they're nowhere to be found. In fact, they're on the opposite side of the vast majority of these debates. And I think that speaks poorly about what the results they want to deliver.
I would just remind everyone that Bill Kennard, who was Bill Clinton's second FCC chairman, who was also the first African-American chairman of the agency, he in part said we shouldn't dump the entire morass of Title II regulation on the cable pipe, on cable modem, because he was concerned about people at the margins. And he understood that people at the margins are really affected by marginal economics, right? Economics is all about where is the profit outweighed by loss, right? And there are a lot of communities like that where they're going to be on that edge. And if you have even relatively small changes in investment and uncertainty about the investment horizon, those are the people that suffer most. So it's not an accident that it was Bill Kennard who started that concern, nor that it was Michael Powell, the Republican second African-American chairman of the agency, who ended up deciding that cable modem was clearly not a Title II service. Nor is it an accident that you had the Congressional Black Caucus and many minority groups who spoke out very consistently about Title II.
Mr. Chairman, you have a busy schedule, and I bet your Twitter feed is absolutely crazy since you haven't had a chance to look at your notifications. Any final words before I let you go?
No, just that I really appreciate the chance to engage with the American public in whatever form, whether it's a podcast, Twitter, or in person. And I'm going to continue doing what I think is right and following the facts and the law wherever they lead me.
Well, thank you so much for joining. Barron, any final words?
Yeah, one important thing that I'm sure people will pounce on that Ajit said earlier, he said that the last FCC dumped the entire morass of Title II on broadband. Of course, people will say, well, no, they didn't. That was Title II, right? They promised not to use all of Title II.
Forbearance, right.
Yeah, that's bullshit. I mean, we've talked about this on this show before, but it's so important to understand that number one, forbearance is purely temporary. And number two, the FCC did invoke the core of Title II, which allows them to do absolutely everything they could want. So that's why we always say the FCC has already opened Pandora's box of internet regulation, and it's up to the courts and Congress to close it.
For Tech Freedom's thoughts on the issue, go to techfreedom.org. We've got a press release responding to your announcement, kind of summarizing our thoughts on that. But that's it for today's show. Thank you guys so much for joining. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Freedom. Let us know what you think. Send us an email at media at techfreedom.org. Find this podcast in the iTunes store where you can leave us a review, because we'll help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.